7 years after his death, Jacob Marley is given one of the best-known send-offs in English literature.
Marley was dead. There is no doubt whatever about that.
Dickens continues. The register of his burial was signed by the clergyman, the clerk, the undertaker, and the chief mourner. Scrooge signed it. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. Words from the opening of A Christmas Carol. We're reminded that the obituary declarations that open Charles Dickens' tale announce what has become a Western institution, part of the fabric of our culture. Paradoxically, our very familiarity with Dickens' material is one of its strengths, claims Maggie Mancinelli Cahill, artistic director of the Capitol Repertory Theater in Albany. This is our equivalent to Greek theater, she says. Everyone already knows the story. Everyone's heard the dialogue. Bah, humbug! And Christmas, what's Christmas to me? The tale practically tells itself, she says. The challenge and the opportunity is to reconnect emotionally with it. It has to be heartfelt, she says. It has to be real. Stage directors of Dickens' novella would be well advised to take a look at those opening lines again, with Dickens hammering away at the fact of Marley's death, as if there were lingering doubts, as if Marley might rise up and stroll away, which, ironically, he does. A Christmas Carol is a story of spiritual rebirth, so it begins with a death. But it's also a story of guilt and human responsibility. So, like Hamlet, it's full of ghosts, those spectral spokespersons of remorse and injustice. Adrian Hall, who is former artistic director of the Dallas Theater Center, says, A Christmas Carol doesn't have to be pastel colors and cute chimney tops. It isn't about quaintness. Many productions don't really reach the emotional climax of the story because they don't reach the depths. A Christmas Carol is about how you find joy in life after you've stared into your own grave. Those words of Jerome Weeks in American Theater, December 2000, who points to the way the theatricality of the ghosts rendered on stage can, if properly rendered, help break through our take-the-story-for-granted frame of mind. Little Theatre of Wilkes-Barre will present A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens this weekend and next, directed by David Parmalee, who is no stranger to classics like Hamlet. David Parmalee paid a visit to the WVIA studios with three members of the Cratchit family, Becky Bennett Corson, Bill Zoransky, and Vaughn Volker, who is Tiny Tim, to talk with us about the show.
I do like the old stuff, and I believe that our notion of Christmas is so very different from what it was in the 1840s when Dickens wrote this. And interestingly, the more you find out about Dickens, the more you realize that a lot of our family-style Christmas traditions, not Black Friday, but things like Christmas trees, Christmas caroling, seasonal parties, dinners, all that sort of thing, came from the Victorians. And my wife likes to say the Victorians were an awful lot like us with less technology. We could relate to the way they thought. So that when Dickens put this together at what they called white heat, he wrote the book in about 6 weeks, he was capturing and at the same time creating a lot of what is Christmas to us. This is only the second Christmas show that Little Theater has done in recent history. So we went right back to the beginning.
Did you begin with his words? Did you go back to the book?
I began with this marvelous adaptation by Romulus Linney that had, I think, the right focus for our theater. Scott Collin, our artistic director, chose it. And it very much emphasizes the ghost story. If you know that line from the song, scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago. I always wondered, scary ghost stories? What does that have to do with Christmas? But this really is the best ghost story ever, with the happiest ending ever. So we decided to treat this, as theater people, like a ghost story. And what could be more theatrical than that?
You're always one to care about context and background.
I did research on this, and the story is quite amazing. Of course, it's Dickens' shortest book. It's a novella. I don't think he ever would have stopped writing some of these novels unless he ran out of paper. And this was a tiny one. It was written in 6 weeks. He would walk 15 to 20 miles a day and make it up as he went along. There are names of characters that he saw on tombstones and street signs as he walked. It sold out. The first edition sold 6,000 copies in 5 days. It sold out 13 editions in the following year. It was immediately, within a year, adapted into stage use because the thing was just so incredibly popular. It's never been out of print. He began reading from it because he was losing money on the book. The book was very expensive to produce. So he said, well, I'll go out and read from the thing I already own and charge for tickets. And he read from it his entire life. He read from the book the week before he died. Well, the book had such an impact that people who tracked those things said they estimated the charitable giving in the nation of England doubled the year after the publication of Christmas Carol. There were people at the time who were trying to create social change, collect money for the poor, because really there was very little. What we know as the modern safety net did not exist. People starved to death. There were very few alternatives. And they had approached Dickens, he was only 32 at the time, said, what can you do to help? Can you help us? Can you speak? Can you write? And he said, I'm going to do something even better. I'm going to write a book because that's what I do. And it probably had a greater impact on the encouragement of charity from one citizen to another than any other work ever produced than since the Bible. So it was a legacy that few authors can claim.
This is certainly one of the busiest times of the year, and yet you all signed on to do this piece, and I'm curious about why.
Well, I think, I mean, in the end, it's a story about love. And I feel like it's really nice to bring the Christmas spirit at this time of year. And people, I think people are really going to enjoy seeing the show. You know, we're the Cratchit family, so we get to just show a family doesn't need to have a lot to have a beautiful life together. And I think they really emphasize that. So, I mean, it was just exciting to be able to do something so bright and happy and joyful, you know, even in the busyness of the year that people can all enjoy.
Same with you?
Well, no. What it is with me is that David was saying, ask me a number of times, audition for me, audition for me, audition for me, audition for me. And finally he comes up with the Christmas Carol, and I go, oh, I don't know. Because, yes, it's a traditional story. It's a classic story, and often ends up being cliched. It all looks the same. So I audition it. David says, well, this is what I want to do. I want to make it fresh. I want to make it new. And I like that because no matter what part I play, it has to be different. You have to have a certain life in it. When you lift a character up, you can lift a show up. It becomes different, new, and fresh. And that's what he thinks we should do. And I think the audience will appreciate it.
What kinds of elements would make this fresh then with the focus on the ghostiness?
We have a theater built in 1941, and every theatrical company has blessings and curses with their facility. Some folks say they're too small, sometimes it's too big. It's nice to have a modern place because less maintenance and upkeep, but the aura and the feeling you get in a grand old theater is something special. And 1941, I mean, we've got the old mahogany cases that used to hold posters for Casablanca. We've got Art Deco decorations backstage and a big proscenium and a big stage that we can fill with really theatrical things to make for that true theatrical experience. So one of the things we're doing, being a ghost story, we want some magic. We want some magician's tricks in here. Or maybe we've got families in the audience. We've got a grandmother or grandfather with a grandson or granddaughter. And they see people appear where they weren't before or disappear, and they don't know how they got there. They see scenery move around, and they don't know how it's moving. Then at other times, we do what my friend Dave Reynolds likes to call showing the strings, and we literally do. So our third spirit, the spooky spirit, the spirit of Christmas yet to come, is played by Celia Pugh, who's an 11-year-old dancer. She dances it beautifully, but we have a 10-foot-high replica of her with giant hands and a giant head, operated by three puppeteers, whom you can see. And they're working together on the movement. So we're trying to give people a combination of good old-fashioned kind of vaudeville, cheesy magic that they can enjoy, and at the same time, watching theater being created, which is its own kind of a joy. And it's a privilege to be able to be in that house where you can do those kinds of things. David Schock on our lighting, looking forward to doing great stuff. Bernie Mulcahy with our sound, things of that nature. That's going to be a whole package. We're looking forward to it.
Why and how are the Cratchits going to be fresh? How are your characters coming to us in a fresh way?
Well, one thing, I talked to David about. Yes, we have the suspense created by the ghost's appearance, but also you have a drama. And as we've worked with the drama, the character's interactions has become more intense. And what I do enjoy are the moments of humor in the play. Why? Because the humor heightens the drama, and the moments of utter sorrow, because there is death seen in it. And then when you see the humor, the drama, the death, and at the very end, the happy ending becomes more fulfilling.
From your point of view, you see it that way as well?
Definitely. And I think David was talking about it, but the idea that I feel like with the family that we have, they're strong. They're not some family that you would pity. They're a family that you would look at and you would be like, these are wonderful people. Look at how happy they are. Look at the fun and the love and the playfulness. There's a lot of playfulness that definitely enhances what when there's troubles later, I think you really feel for them because they feel like real people, like a real family.
Vaughn, have you acted before?
I've acted in Macbeth. That was my first play that I did. And this is my second one, and I did this because Christmas Carol is my favorite movie.
How did you get ready to do Tiny Tim? Did you say your lines with your mom?
Yeah, and with my brother. Sometimes I got some wrong, but most of the time I got a lot of them right. And then I just, like, learned all of my lines, like, today because I didn't mess up or anything on them. Sometimes I get a crutch and just like pretend to like play with it, but I never had it for real. I never had like a broken leg or anything, but I sprained my ankle once.
How did you find Vaughn?
Well, we found him through Scott because Scott was in the Scottish play with him. He said, I got a Tiny Tim for you. Of course, he auditioned like everybody else. One of the great things about this experience, and it's kind of new for me at Little Theater, I think we have four families involved where the parents and the kids are in the show. There's about 8 or 9 kids in it. We have our wonderful urchin gang that goes around the stage, and we got tremendous response. We have our summer workshops, and a lot of the young people in the summer workshop said, what's your next thing for kids? And this happened to be it. So we got really lucky. We had just great young talent. And the Cratchit family is a good example. I think, from 9 years old to, there's a young woman there who's 20. In her 20s, and they've bonded together so beautifully. They're like a real family.
One of the things I love about your productions, David, is your attention to music. And I'm sure that's the case here.
Oh, we're looking forward to that. We always enjoy finding the right selections. And again, my wife, Toni Jo, loves that sort of thing. And one of the things people remember about Christmas Carol is the characters of the Fezziwigs, Scrooge's former boss. And there's always a party at the Fezziwigs. My grandmother, who was born in 1894, played Mrs. Fezziwig in high school. Imagine that. So they all have to dance. And of course, being a non-musical, our actors did an audition to sing and dance. So some of them said, dancing? Really? So we decided if we're going to do a big dance, people who may not be looking forward to dancing, let's have them polka. So one of the things we're using is Strauss's Feuerfest polka, which involves a fire bell played on an anvil. So a little classical, but quite familiar to anybody who grew up within the range of our voices.
Oh, by the way, yes, you're going to sing. Oh, really? I wish you would have told me that. But anyway. No.
In four-part harmony.
In four-part harmony. But the voices are wonderful. The Cratchit family is grand. The young ladies are wonderful singers. The young man is great. The father is actually grand himself, of course. And, of course, Tiny Tim has his own little solo there, and he handles it extremely well.
What's your little solo?
Silent Night.
He's fantastic.
Yes, he is.
Every time he does his lines, my eyes fill with tears, and that's the truth.
Well, we wanted from the beginning to use old Christmas carols. We said, let's go back into the archives and dig up some old ones. What we found was the old ones are the ones we sing now. The Victorian carols, for the most part, are the classic-sounding ones that have been retained. Well, you turn on the radio these days during Christmas, and you're hearing John Lennon, you're hearing Last Christmas I Gave You My Heart, you're hearing the Bangles. But those old Christmas carols, some of them that I learned when I was a kid, sound very, very old. Good King Wenceslas, God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen, the Coventry Carol. Some of them are so touching and so full of the pathos of that Christian story. And of course, they were all very religious at the time, for the most part. We had Deck the Halls. We saw Three Ships a-Sailing. And those marvelous old tunes, that's when they got popular, is around that time of Dickens in the 1830s, 40s, and 50s. So what we wanted to create was an ensemble of people who sang for fun, because that's what you did, and would go out together into the streets of London caroling together in four-part harmony as a hobby. So that's kind of the sound we were after, rather than the sound of a musical ensemble.
You're giving us this great theatrical experience. What about costumes?
Oh my gosh, we have a great costumer. Lisa Fink is one of the veteran costumers in the area. And the fun part about putting together period pieces of any kind is making something from JCPenney look like it was a bespoke piece from 1843. And she has come up with great, great things. But on top of costuming real people, she has to costume the spirits, ghosts, and angels. So we're in the process of doing that now, making those creative choices. It'll look good.
Do you love wearing that period garb?
I enjoy the dress because the character becomes more so. They become real. They're not just somebody wearing a coat. They become a being that exists in a place and a time. And then you add the stage to it. It's the essence of what the story's about.
I love period costumes. I would take a period show anytime. It's just so much fun. You walk differently when you put those costumes on. You just carry yourself in a different way.
And of course, we've been polka-ing all around it. There is the character of Scrooge. How does he come to us in a way that is fresh?
Felix has a certain humor to him, which he brings. It's in his stance, it's in his voice. He wants to play a curmudgeon in real life. But on stage, he brings sort of a gritty warmth. It's a strange way of saying it, but he's like, he can be crass, but I think it'll come across with a wink in his eye. He wants to dislike Tiny Tim. He wants to dislike the orphans. He wants to dislike the businessmen, but he doesn't dislike them. It's something from his past. I made this wrong decision here in my life, and it's been affecting his life like an echo, a reverberation. And part of the appearance of the ghost is to say, look at these things. They happened at this place and time, but there's no reason to carry it through the rest of your life. Leave the past where it belongs.
And the transformation to the ending when he does see the error in his ways is really beautiful.
He's such a wounded character. He's wounded by the death of his sister who took care of him. His father was cold, left him at school over the holidays, good heavens. And his sister comes and rescues him and dies young. Well, the sister, of course, is represented by the ghost of Christmas past, Carol Sweeney. We cast her as a woman. He's then wounded by his own bad choices, rejecting the only woman he ever loved, never dancing again, never loving again. So we very quickly begin to see the wound behind the nastiness, the dog that bites out of fear, not out of viciousness, that Scrooge is afraid to face all this. And quickly in the play, he begins to be shown and he begins to melt. And of course, toward the end, the melting is rapid. And we say, ah, there it is, the world's happiest ending.
And what does A Christmas Carol have to say to us today?
What you do and how you live affects the lives of other people. And as you see Scrooge recognizing his place in life and how if I change the way I deal with other people, those people change. And it brings that community that you always want and actually you expect from a story like this.
You know, it's funny. I live in Shavertown in a development that's been there forever. And Thanksgiving and Christmas, the driveways fill up because this is an older area. You know, and the kids are coming back. Well, ours amongst them. Our driveway is full. We have four children. And, you know, they come back and they bring more, you know. So the house is full of Thanksgiving mm-hmm. and Christmas. And it's such a joy, you know, to have kids return. And the Cratchits talk about at the end. They say, Tiny Tim will remember Tiny Tim because he was the first parting we experienced. And the Bob Cratchit comes out and says, in time, Peter will get married and he'll move away. And we will part, but we'll remember him and honor him and how kind our friend Tim was. And we shall not quarrel easily amongst ourselves and forget him in doing so. So outside of any tragedy or pain that's in life, it's a normal part of life that people part. And that's one thing Dickens is reminding us about, whether it be a family or a community, you know, enjoy and treasure the connections that you have.
So when all is said and done,
between the ghosts, the relationship between the characters, the family, the businessmen, the caroling, which helps join one scene to the next scene to the next scene, because as they are classic songs, they have a feel to them that you can't replace. And when they're sung in four-part harmony, there's a feel of just the sound that can overwhelm you, and I think that the audience will leave totally fulfilled.
Yeah, and moved. I think there'll be tears. I feel the tears, and I've watched it over and over, but every time I still feel that feeling of just, when you're watching a classic like that, done with such vision and having a great leader, I think it really makes a big difference. I think it's going to be wonderful.
And how about when we hear those words?
Go for it.
God bless us, everyone.
Vaughn Volker will be Tiny Tim, visiting us here at the WVIA Studios. Director David Parmalee and two other members of the Cratchit family, in addition to Tiny Tim, Becky Bennett-Corson and Bill Zaransky. The Little Theatre of Wilkes-Barre will present the Charles Dickens classic, A Christmas Carol, in an adaptation by Romulus Linney, and that's this weekend and next, December 8th through the 17th. Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m., Sundays at 3, in the Historic Theater at 537 North Main Street in Wilkes-Barre. For more information on the web, ltwb.org, ltwb.org, or you can find Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre on Facebook. That's the Charles Dickens Classic, A Christmas Carol, December 8th through the 17th, Fridays and Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 3, at the Little Theater of Wilkes-Barre, 537 North Main Street. For more information on the web, ltwb.org.